Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors.
We're about two minutes early. On
WVOM, to find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, Greg Burr.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host, Greg Burr, coming to you live from Blueberry Broadcasting Studio 7 in Bangor, Maine. I'm joined by our crack technical team and good friends, Jim Layton and Norm Plord. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, good.
Doing
great.
Well.
All right, good to see you. Good to see you.
You too.
Now, see, here we are at the start of February and Super Bowl Sunday. Are you ready for some football, guys?
No, not while we're here.
Well, good, because that's the answer I wanted to hear, because this is the show everybody should be tuning into tonight. We got a great guest and a lot of good stuff to talk about, so that was the right answer, guys. So everybody, all listeners tonight, pull up a stump, get your pour your favorite beverage. Because we got a good show for you. Lots of good information coming your way. Our program tonight is brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal, the best outdoor newspaper in Maine.
You bet.
All right. And General Appliance on Center Street in Brewer. We want to remind everybody that our listeners can hear our show on 103.9 FM Bangor, 101.3 FM Augusta, 95.1 FM Rockland, and on our podcast at WVOMFM.com. And as always, if you have a question or comment for our show, please call us at 1-800-966-1039. Our guest tonight is a forest manager for American Forest Management Company out of Milford, Maine. That's Mike Howie. Mike, good evening, and welcome to our show tonight.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. We're going to get to Mike in just a few minutes, but before we get to our guests, let's check in on what's going on in our Outdoor Digest. Jim, Norm, can you cue the music?
Hunting, fishing, loving every day. That's the prayer that a country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting, fishing, loving every day.
Love that intro. Thanks, guys. And we want to remind everybody to visit the Northwood Sporting Journal's new website at www.sportingjournal.com or www.sportingjournal.com. I also want to give a shout-out tonight to my good friend Bob Brennan and his son Bobby Brennan and their family up there in Moosehead Lake. I went up there and spent a few days with them last week and just had a fabulous time. They got a great spot up there on the lake, and they're just all about having people come up and spend time with them, and they're just terrific. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to them. I think they're listening tonight, and tell them how much I appreciated being up there with them. It was just wonderful. So. But now I want to also talk about ice conditions. How's everything looking over there on Fields Pond, Jim?
Well, it looks pretty good. I can't tell you how much ice there is, but apparently there's enough to hold about 30 people there today.
Okay.
And a few of those four-wheelers out there.
Yeah, the weather was good, not much wind.
Oh, they were having a great time.
Yeah, temperature's good.
A lot of fish this weekend.
Yeah, excellent.
I'd like to have somebody call in.
Yeah, I'd like to have somebody call in and tell us what they're doing out there. Up there on Moosehead, I can tell you this weekend, it was not a breath of wind in the 20s and 30s. Just gorgeous.
Nice weather to be there.
Yeah, if you could have two days in a row without any wind, no northwest wind coming down through there, I mean, how rare is that?
Yeah.
So it was nice. Now, the ice conditions around some of the bigger lakes in Hancock and Washington County, Tunk Lakes, main basin is still very treacherous, a lot of open water up there. And a lot of that, if it's frozen, it's just scum over in the last few days. So please be extremely careful on the northern end of Tunk if you venture out there. I know some people are fishing the southern end, but the northern end, boy, I don't know if you catch me out there. And I spend a lot of time on the ice. That's not a place I'd want to be. Branch has been good. You got some pretty good ice conditions out there now, but as always, out in the middle around the Cow and the Calf, you got to be careful and down through the Narrows. Over at Green Lake, and still people aren't venturing out on the northern or southern basin that much. There's still some thinner ice out there, so you got to be extremely careful south of Cow Island and in that northern basin up there off Jenkins Beach. That still can be treacherous with some thinner ice. Beach Hill Pond's looking good. Safe ice all over the pond over there. I think people are traversing all over that one. Phillips Lake, Mike, you fished there last weekend and stuff. That was looking good all over.
Yeah, it was 9 to 10 inches.
9 to 10, yep, no problems there. Donnell Pond over there in Franklin, I just had somebody text me a picture down there off between Redmond's and Scudic Beach. There's a big pressure ridge that's opened up down there. That's where that deep water is, and the wind funnels down through there off that mountain. And still got some pretty thin ice, treacherous ice conditions down there. So if you're venturing around Donnell Pond down that end, you want to use a lot of caution. The MDI waters down there on Mount Desert Island, I was talking with the game warden end of last week, and really still have some treacherous ice conditions down there on Jordan Pond down between the mountains, and on the southern end on Long Pond down between those mountains. That wind whistles down through there and keeps that water stirred up, and so it's pretty treacherous there. Eagle Lake just froze over a week or so ago, and people are fishing it, but you still want to use caution out there, especially towards the middle. And West Grand just opened up, guys, yesterday. Opening day. Yeah. And my guy's been working on the lakes down there, and they saw a lot of people and a lot of fish. The fishing was fantastic. The salmon looked great, some large togue out there, and some nice whitefish. And they said ice conditions were good. Of course, you got to always be concerned about ice around that dam down around the outlet, and there's a bunch of pressure ridges that you got to be concerned about in and around the points and any of the tributaries coming in. But for the most part, it looked really good. So they were going pretty much anywhere they wanted to, and they had around 12 to 14 inches of ice up there.
Nice.
So then I wanted to get to talking about some fishing derbies coming up here. We got the Down East YMCA Fishing Derby at Willie's Sports Shop on Route 1A in Ellsworth. That's next weekend, February 8th and 9th. There's all kinds of door prizes down there. I think they got either, I think it's a side-by-side or four-wheeler as a big door prize. And they got prizes for the biggest salmon, lake trout, brook trout, bass, and pickerel. And a large cash prize for the smallest accumulated weight of 6 lake trout from Beach Hill Pond. That's that management category that these derby organizers are helping us out with. Weigh in there is in front of Willie's at between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. under the tent. Fun for the whole family. Kids will come. The music's playing. They're giving out all kinds of prizes. They just do a great job with this derby, and it's there to benefit the Down East YMCA youth camp on Webb Pond. And I can tell you, I helped out with camp last summer, and the kids just love that camp. They do all kinds of activities. They're doing fishing and crafts and all kinds of stuff, canoeing and things.
Sounds like a great cause.
It really is. Down East YMCA does a terrific job with that. Let's see, and the next derby after that that's coming up is the Slim's Fishing Derby on Toddy Pond Landing, which is just off Route 1 in Orland. And that's on the free fishing days. That's February 15th and 16th on all waters in Hancock County, open to fishing. Prizes for the biggest salmon, lake trout, brook trout, brown trout, splake, and pickerel. And large cast prize for the least accumulated weight of 6 lake trout from Beach Hill Pond. Again, we've got that management category. The derby organizer has been great working with us on that. All proceeds go to the Slim's College Scholarship Fund. and there'll be a food vendor on hand right there at the landing, and they give free fishing tip-ups for all the kids that bring in a fish.
Wow.
So it's a great event. The folks there at Slim's do a terrific job. Most of those folks are from that Sedgwick, Brooksville, Deer Isle, Stonington area, and just a close-knit bunch that do a terrific job on their derby. Before I get to the next one, why don't we take a break for a commercial, and we will be right back. And just want to remind everybody, while the other stations are rocking, we're talking about the Maine outdoors. Right back after this message. All right, and we are back. And we're in the Still in the Outdoor Digest section of our show tonight, and we're talking about fishing derbies. The next one coming up after the one I just mentioned there on the 15th and 16th, this one is the next weekend after that. It's on February 22nd and 23rd. It's the G&M Market Fishing Derby under the tent at the market right there at Route 1A in Holden. Includes all waters open to ice fishing in Hancock County, prizes for the biggest salmon, lake trout, brook trout, bass, and pickerel, and there's a large cash prize for the least accumulated weight of 6 lake trout from Beach Hill Pond again. We're loading up with these derby organizers on them helping us out with thinning out the toad population.
Thin those guys out.
That's right. We got to do it. And they've been terrific in agreeing to do that with us. So lots of door prizes and free pizza under the tent right there at G&M Market on Route 1A in Holden. And Greg Hawes and his staff are terrific. They just are very accommodating to us and everybody else, all the patrons that go there. This is for them, and they've got some great door prizes on hand. I think they have a four-wheeler again this year. I think that they're raffling off, so it's a big deal, and they do a great job every year. So that's some of the last derbies in our area that I had to report on. Now I wanted to get to our guest, Mike Howie with American Forest Management. And Mike, thanks again for coming in this evening. I know it's Super Bowl night, and some people would rather be home, but we'd rather be here talking about forest management in Hancock County, Hancock and Washington County. Let's talk about, tell us about AFM, American Forest Management. What do they do? What do you guys do there?
One misconception is that people think we're the landowner. AFM is a land management consulting firm that we manage for a wide variety of different landowner types, from an investment group or just a large single landowner, water districts, as well as like a lot of small woodlot owners. We've managed lots down to 20 acres. So we've got a staff of foresters that meets those different client needs, and with that come with a lot of the outdoor issues as well. That's our primary task.
Yeah. So you folks are managing land for different private landowners all over the country, not just Maine. So and you got a lot of you folks have been doing this for a long time, because even before you became America's Forest Management, you were Sustainable Forest Technologies, and you were basically a subsidiary of International Paper. Is that correct?
That's right.
So, all right.
I started even back a little further with Champion International.
Right, okay.
Started down Bucksport.
Yeah, yeah. And you and I talked about this in prep for the show. The land in our area here in Hancock and Washington County has changed hands over the years. So when I first started in this field in the 80s, it was which company was it? I'm trying to remember. Was it St. Regis was back then?
That was just about the end of St. Regis,
okay. Yeah. And then it went to Champion. Mm-hmm. And then from there it went to
International Paper.
And then it went to GMO. Okay, and now it's with BBC Land Holdings or Ursa Major, I think, right?
That's right.
Okay, yep. And I just want to put out there to everybody, I think most sportsmen know that traverse that area on those roads. We as sportsmen are extremely fortunate to have these companies and owners managing these woodlands and allowing the public access that they do, not just to park off the tarred road and you know, walk into the woods, but to actually use the roads at most of the times of the year, not all times of the year, because you have some times when you got to shut gates and protect the roads when it's mud season, right? So, but people, we just want to remind everybody how fortunate we are, because as Mike knows, because the company does operate all through the country, this situation is pretty unique to Maine, right, Mike?
That's right. Now, back up a little further, the landowner, this current landowner, his primary objective when he purchased these lands was to keep the traditional use. You know, and Greg, you mentioned the spring gate closure. Mm-hmm. That's primarily to preserve the road infrastructure that we're maintaining for logging. So,
right.
As most people know, that spring's the time of year when the roads are really soft.
And, right.
After the spring we had last year and the way the winter's setting up this year, we're probably going to have a long gate closure.
But, yeah.
We monitor that.
Sure, sure.
But getting to your point about the public access, you know, or the traditions, you mentioned other parts of the country. I would say Maine's unique mm-hmm. for that standpoint of the open access.
Right.
And other parts of the country, I mean, it's access by permission only.
Right.
And I know there's more postings going up, but for a lot of these large landowners that I'm just representing but one.
Right.
That open access is, I know, important to people.
Right.
And, I don't see that changing.
Right, right. Well, that's great. Great to hear that the owner really feels that's something that still wants to continue to do, you know. Mm-hmm. I know when we talk about public access to lakes and ponds and the people owning the waters here in Maine and still being able to have access to fish or fowl on those lakes and how strongly we feel about that. And again, I remind everybody how lucky we are to have that situation, because it's not that way in most of the country where the public just is guaranteed access to fish or fowl to cross across undeveloped land to get to those waters to be able to do that. And when we travel other places and we hear that these places have been privatized, lakes have been privatized, and you can't get into them. So here in Maine, like you say, Mike, we do have a unique situation, and all of us are very fortunate that we have the place that we have to live. It's our quality of place and quality of life. Mm-hmm. So good. I just wanted to get to make that point. And let's talk about what your company has to go through before you prescribe a wood harvesting plan.
I think the primary thing that we go by is what we call an EMS, which is that follows an SFI, Sustainable Forestry Initiative. That's kind of our doctrine mm-hmm. That we get audited on annually. To prove to the auditors or the third party verification that we're managing the lands at a sustainable level. From that, that sustainable harvest is where our foresters starting to identify
right.
areas that need to be harvested, and how do you access roads to get there or improve right. roads.
Sure. Is that changed over the years? I mean, you know, if you started to talk with an outdoorsman about how management might have changed on the landscape for wood harvesting, Mike, would you say that it used to be more clear cutting, and that may not have been as sustainable as what you would prescribe these days?
It's changed, I think, in the scale of clear cutting because of the Forest Protection Act, mm-hmm. Which reduced the size of the clear cuts. But I think the biggest change had to do with the difference in the pulp and paper market. You know, for years there was a lot of plantations being put in and herbicide to
right.
Thin out the hardwood. But with the forest products market, it has really flipped, where hardwood pulp is really a desired species. So mm-hmm. that's one thing that we have to contend with, is whatever the hot market is, our challenge is managing the land.
Right.
You know, so what's the best use for that acre of growing that tree?
Right.
Despite whatever the hot product is right now.
Sure, sure, yeah. Interesting. Well, things do change over time, and you got to roll with it. Let's see. I know that your company prefers to keep wide buffers around riparian areas, you know, any of those wet areas around brooks, streams, rivers, and things. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and what your perspective is on that?
Yeah. As I was referring to earlier, for SFI, management plan that we've pretty much broken the forest down into two key operating areas. General management is areas where it's operable ground. There's really no environmental concern and or regulatory concern. But most of the lakes and rivers, I mean, they all have a shoreline zoning ordinance associated to it, as well as the wildlife habitat needs that overlap in that. So most of those areas, be it the bogs and that, we've come up with a riparian management strategy to manage those lands for timber secondarily. The primary purpose of these is to maintain the structure of these stands for the multiple wildlife and uses of those areas.
That's terrific, because it does benefit a lot of wildlife and fisheries, as you know, a lot more. We're seeing that those areas are important for, say, deer wintering habitat, even a lot of different terrestrial animals as travel corridors along those rivers and streams. Of course, for fisheries, we love to see those areas protected because it helps maintain recharge rates. It helps buffer against siltation, erosion, that type of thing. Also, it buffers against thermal pollution, because you've got those canopies that keep that ground and groundwater cooler that flows into those areas. So we can help maintain our native species better in with that type of management going on. So that's great. Let's see. I wanted to just touch a little bit on your camp lease program. I know you guys sold off probably 60 to 70% of those over the years, but still have a few left.
We do. I think two or three landowners were a lot of those recreational leases where people were leasing a half acre or an acre site, usually along lakes, and a lot of those have sold off.
Right.
There's some remnant leases still in place, but now we're contending with a lot more camps that are now adjacent landowners, per se. And many of the larger lakes, they've had to form some road associations to cover some of their costs. And we've had to work closely with them in some cases of just working out logistics, how we're going to handle that moving forward.
Right. Great. I'm getting to the time where I want to break for another commercial. So why don't we do that, and we'll get right back to our listeners. And remember, while the other stations are rocking, we're talking about the Maine outdoors. We'll be right back.
More Maine outdoors next.
Okay, we're back, folks. Thank you for being patient with us and getting through those important commercials. Now, I wanted to just, again, remind everybody, if you have a question or comment for our guest for our show tonight, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. We're talking with Mike Howie, a forest manager with America's Forest Management Company that manages a big part of the forest landscape here in Washington and Hancock County. Mike, and we did talk earlier, we just touched upon the spring road closure dates, and usually they're between March 15th and May 15th. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you guys have a call-in number now, where because people are always wondering when are the roads going to close and when are they going to open? You got that number handy?
I do. We call that the road info line. It primarily for the Studmill Road area. That number is 817-9095. It's just a number we put out weekly of just saying when we anticipate to open the roads up, because we average about 20 to 30 phone calls a day on this very topic.
Right. Good deal. All right. That number again for that info in the spring around mud season is 817-9095, right, Mike?
Correct.
And we have a caller?
Yes, we do.
Okay, put him through.
Caller,
what's your name and who are you calling from?
Hi, my name is JJ. I'm calling from Knox County.
All right, JJ. What's your question or comment for our show tonight?
Well, unfortunately, it's not related to the guest you have on, and I apologize for that. But I heard you talking about ice safety earlier.
Yeah.
And I missed the very beginning of your show, but I just wanted to give a shout-out to Deputy Arthur Smith of the Knox County Sheriff's Office, who performed a heroic rescue in Crawford Pond last night when a side-by-side went through the ice.
Yeah.
And he rescued two men from there, and they're both recovering right now. So congratulations to him, and I just wanted to give a shout-out.
another first responder hero that we hear so often about. Thank you very much, JJ, for calling in and letting us know about that. That's just terrific when you can get a quick response like that and save people's lives. I think that's just that's just heroic.
Especially
for sure.
This cold water.
Yeah, and this really cold water for about, sure.
I mean, it was going right with what you were saying about some lakes are really dangerous right around the inlets, and I believe that's where they were.
Yeah, we've had
three callers or 911 callers who started the rescue attempt. So
okay,
leave them out.
That's great. All right.
I did have a quick question about Tunk Lake.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead, JJ.
In December, I believe it was talked about Tunk Lake, maybe the deepest lake in the state. And it was said that we should ask you about whether that's true or not. And I don't know if that ever happened. So do you have any insight on that situation?
But it's not the deepest lake in the state. I think it's the third deepest lake in the state. I believe, and hopefully I get this right, I think it's Sebago is the number one deepest.
Yes.
And, yeah, okay. That's and then there's Moosehead in behind Kineo. And then we've got Tunk, which is around 225 to 250 in there. So, but I think Sebago is like 350 feet deep, something like that.
Almost 400.
Almost 400, Jim says. Wow. So, yeah. Yep. So, yeah, that it's third, but not first. So, Sebago has that distinction.
So, that mystery deep hole doesn't exist?
The mystery deep hole in Tunk?
Yes.
Well, no, it's deep.
It's there. It's there. It's a very small place.
Jim knows because he's trolled it a long time. But
I've fixed that many times.
No, but it's there. But it's not as deep as it's not the number one deepest lake in the state. That's for sure. number three.
Okay, well, listening, we can settle that question.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in, JJ. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Have a good night.
All right, you too. Thanks, JJ. All right, so we got the road closure number, or the road info number. Now, the fall is the highest user time for road use on the lands that you folks see. I mean, it's hunting season, right?
That's right.
And so that's when a lot of your road deterioration goes on from the public's use. Is that right?
That's right. That's a topic that the road damage in the fall can be just as bad as in the spring. And we bat around the idea of maybe closing some gates in the fall, but I think we soon realized that we also live in these communities that would have a lot of upset people.
Sure.
One of the reasons why I'm on tonight to maybe ask those that are out and about, if you're starting to see that you're rutting, pull off, park, walk in from there.
Right. Great. So. No, that's a good... It's a good reminder for folks because we do take it for granted at times that those roads are open and whether they're getting soft or not, we want to use them because we want to be out there. So, yeah, just be mindful of that, all the listeners out there. That again, those roads are on private property, but they're good gracious. That good graces they're allowing us to utilize those. So, North Main Woods, you have to pay to get in through gates to use those, and those funds offset some of that road maintenance that they have to do up there. But down here, AFM takes care of that for us and still allows us to use the road. So we're very much appreciative. And that road maintenance is hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. The company has to pay out, or the owner has to pay out to do that. So,
or more,
right? and you folks work with a lot of different organizations, Mike. Landowner Appreciation Day, with this land cleanup with game wardens, and volunteers, and that's terrific. It's really important to have that appreciation for not only the land that you folks manage, but for all lands that are open to sportsmen. So
that's right. And I do want to give a shout out to Rick LaFlamme and with the Landowner Assistance Program he's done a great job, along as others in the Warden Service and the Forest Service that coordinate those days. That AFM is just but one landowner that many landowners truly appreciate the efforts they do.
Yep. He and Dave Shabbat, who run that Landowner Appreciation a day and all through the year. They just have come at the job with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy. They're terrific with people. They're great liaisons for the Warden Service and the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. I've had the pleasure of working with them on a number of occasions, and they're just terrific. So I'm glad that they're working well with you guys, and you're seeing a lot of benefits from that. That's terrific. And let's see, you also work with BPL, right? Is it Brian Bronson with the ATV?
That's right.
Yeah, ATVs and snowmobile trails. So, you know, tell us a little bit about that and how that goes on your properties.
Right, and Brian Higgins heads off the snowmobile division.
Okay, but, Brian Higgins, yeah.
AFM works closely with a lot of the agencies in alignment with the ATV trails and snowmobile trails that we've entered into a land use agreement with the BPL directly.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, a lot of that work had been coordinated with local clubs, and that became inefficient. And I think working directly with the state, we can put forward our expectations for best management practices, the road, water crossings, that
right.
The task really falls on the state to work with those local clubs to
right.
Find the for those trouble areas.
Sure.
We've had to close some trails down just to lack of maintenance.
Right.
Unfortunately, I think these clubs struggle for members to do some of those weekend
right.
work, but we do recognize that. But our task is looking after the landowners.
Yes.
Best interests. So.
Sure. Great. And we have a caller on the line.
Yes,
caller, go ahead. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, my name's Kevin Smith, and I'm calling from out in Carmel, and I apologize. I'm tuning in late, so if I'm asking a question that's already come up, just blow me off. But, hey, I had a quick question for you guys about you're talking landowner, you know, you're talking about the organization that you're representatives. And as a summary, you're not representing, but, you know, Irving, Cassidy family, and some of the Prentice and Kyle, all the big groups. Is it, in your guys' opinion, still a truth, an actual hard truth, that the old saying of, if we ever try and have Sunday hunting in Maine, all these big landowners are going to close their land off for the rest of the week? Because I know that's been a long time comment by some of the folks that don't want to move into the next generation of actually going golfing 7 days a week, going fishing 7 days a week, and going hunting 7 days a week. So I don't know if you guys got any input. That's still a truth, or that's just an old saying to keep us from getting a referendum so we can do our freedom right to do what we can. Everyone else can go golfing and watch football all week long, but us hunters, we have to cut it down to six. So I don't know if you guys input on that or if that's a topic tonight, but I thought I'd throw it in there, guys. So
no.
Thanks for having me, and I'll get off so I can listen.
All right. Well, thank you for your question, Kevin. And
all right.
Mike, you want to take that?
Yes. Fortunately, I'm a forester. I'm not a legislator. I'm not an attorney. But we represent the landowners, and reminded that these are private lands. You know, and these landowners, especially our largest clients, want to maintain traditional use to a point. I can't speak for all landowners, but I know this is a hot topic issue.
Right.
I'm a hunter myself. I would love to be able to hunt on Sunday. But I think we could probably spend another 4 hours debating this one.
Right.
But we have to consider the landowner first.
Absolutely.
What are their needs?
Sure.
What are their concerns?
Yep.
And we have to listen to what they're saying, or our open access, as we have known for the past 50 years,
right.
It could change.
It could change, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And their landowners are certainly number one stakeholder in the state when you start talking about issues like that. So, yeah, that's a good point, Mike. You know, so I'm sure they would have some questions or concerns with some of that, of course, increased use and what might happen. So
yeah. I wonder if they ever considered using, like, the main public lands as, you know, opening those up on Sundays.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Dave Trahan was on the show a few weeks ago, and we posed some of that question to him, and because they were coming at it from a lot of different avenues like
sure.
that, and I think that they would really like to see it, but there's still a lot of groups out there that they're saying, you know, this is a real shaky road to go down, so they're very reluctant to do anything like that.
Well, it's like the spring bear hunt. I mean, the
right.
landowners are concerned that.
Yes.
No, the roads would take a beating, and even though it'd be a real productive season for bear hunting. It's it'd be a downside to it.
Yeah, you agree with that, Mike?
I do.
Yeah. So we talked about that before, mm-hmm. Norm, and so they would be concerned. Something I'd never even considered.
Right.
You know, we've got a lot of bear out there. A lot of bear issues. Well, why don't we just open it up in the spring? We used to have a spring bear hunt. Why don't we do that?
I know Randy Cross was big for having a spring bear, but he couldn't get it.
Yeah, and so there are a lot of other issues that need to be considered, and road use and land use is one
huge.
Of them.
That's huge.
And again, even on the spring bear hunt issue, that it needs to come back to what the landowner's concerns are, because many of the large landowner's concerns is the road damage.
Right,
You know, when are they going to start to bait?
Exactly.
You know, and
that's right. Yeah.
Middle April.
And that, right.
That's when the roads take a beating.
Sure, yep. Yeah, right. So good one. Good point. And I'm glad, again, Kevin Smith, thank you for calling in with that question. I want to take a moment just to recognize one of our big sponsors, and that's General Appliance in Brewer, your place to go for camp appliance needs, whether it's gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or the top-of-the-line compost toilets. Right, Jim?
Ride the wave, baby.
Ride the wave, yeah.
Gotcha.
Compost toilets, no running water, no plumbing issues, no septic to be pumped, no leach field problems, no environmental issues, right?
I'm going to have to check that out. I mean, it's such a hot topic here that it's got to be something to it.
Exactly. This advanced technology. So General Appliance at 91 Center Street in Brewer is your non-electric connection. A family-owned business since the 1920s, Al Alkin has found his niche in these changing energy times. General Appliance is there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliance needs. General Appliance services used propane appliances and sells parts for all makes and models. Models including the well-known Serval gas fridges. As for the compost toilets, these are the wave of the future in a conservation-minded world. Totally reliable and odor-free, they have to be seen to be believed. If you have a troubleshooting question related to propane appliances, give a call to Al at 989-3714 or stop in for a visit. General Appliance and Brewer, the non-electric solution for camp owners and homeowners alike. Throughout Maine, that's General Appliance at 91 Center Street in Brewer. Ride the wave, baby.
And they come highly recommended by Cousin Lorraine down there in Hartford, Maine.
Ah, hey, great. That's a good testimonial from Cousin Lorraine.
Yes, sir.
We like that. And a testimonial from me as well, because I went in and saw Al and bought a bunch of stuff for my hunting camp. So go in and see Al and call him at General Appliance at 989-3714.
And say hi to Patty for me.
Say hi to Patty. There you
go. She and I worked together for years.
All right. So getting back to, we're speaking with Mike Howie from American Forest Management. You not only work with different state agencies, but you also work with state and federal biologists and wildlife research programs out there. Maybe you can talk to that a little bit, Mike.
Sure. I think that's one of this topic of kind of what makes this job fun.
Yeah.
They're working with other organizations. We're all working on that same resource.
Right.
You know, 30 years ago, a forester and a biologist sitting down talking on a radio show wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And it's nice tonight to see that we may have different objectives and mm-hmm. be able to work through things. And,
right.
You know, and over the years, there's been a lot of work done on the Machias River. There's an easement with the state.
Right.
The Bogbrook flowage in Beddington.
Right.
We work closely with Project Share on Atlantic salmon habitat restoration. They're doing some really neat things.
Yes, they are.
You know, and we keep an arm's length from that, but we kind of will meet once or twice a year, and they'll bring forward some projects. And
right.
For those that drive Route 9, look on the south side of the Narragansett River when you go over that bridge. They're going to be doing some interesting things.
Yes. Sometimes you guys are supplying some of that woody debris to put back into the rivers and streams to get that sinuosity back there, that complexity in the river that's going to benefit a lot of species. So I know you guys work closely with Project Share and others to help bring back Atlantic salmon as well as to benefit brook trout and other species and things. And that organization is greatly appreciative of being able to work closely with you guys. I know that. And you and I work together on different projects. projects. We get involved in some environmental issues and things. We talk about some of the stream crossing stuff with culverts and bridges, and even small corduroy areas and stuff that would get some of the ATVs out of those fording areas, those traditional fording areas that go through some of those tributaries and streams. So all good stuff.
And there's a number of projects we're working with for public access, boat launch sites. And I think that's something that I know is important to the public. We do weigh that, and we see some progress moving forward.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're always mindful when we do work with landowners and land managers like yourselves about the road issue and mud season and things. And we're okay with having those gates be closed to be able to, you know, help maintain the integrity of those roads. And all of us as sportsmen just have to wait until things dry out, and then we can get to those public access sites that we have purchased through the help with AFM and those landowners and things. So we just all have to be mindful of road maintenance and stuff like that. So
unfortunately, some gates have been permanent closure. They are usually the result of trash dumping or some kind of theft or some damage to a camp that we saw no other alternative but to close off some road access.
Right.
But
right.
We still go with the thinking that we're providing access to about 1 million acres of land.
Yes.
You can't keep it all open.
Yep. No, it's true. And I know that you guys give out, allow some camp owners to gate their driveways off, let's say, or camp roads off. That's a standard practice when they get concerned about break-ins or some of the road damage that can happen to their roads going into the camps, correct?
That's right. It's primarily based off of some kind of vandalism, usually.
Yeah, right. Now, what about, spruce budworm? We know that back in the 60s and 70s, I think it was, we had, it was a huge issue where it, defoliated a lot of softwood. And then there was salvage cuts that came in because, again, I mean, that was money for the landowners to be able to to harvest that timber, and it was going by the wayside because of spruce budworm. Maybe you can address that and see where are we at with that right now.
Sure, I don't want to date myself too much, but I came in the end of that budworm era, and I feel fortunate. I worked with many of the foresters that worked through that era, in the 70s and 80s. That was well before my time. But I think they are monitoring up in Quebec that there is a spruce budworm population that is growing. We work with the Maine Forest Service every year to put out pheromone traps to monitor budworm populations. We do get some hits, but it's by no means at an epidemic level.
Right.
The university is doing a lot of research with that and with New Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that will be different, I think, from the 70s and 80s outbreak to if we had an outbreak now, is the road systems that we have in place.
Right.
You know, back at that time when that broke out, there were thousands of acres that was unaccessed, and they just had to let it go.
Right, that's right.
And I think in today's forest, a lot of it's really the balsam fir that's the biggest host for that.
Okay.
And our land management strategy is that a lot of those stands that were thinned pre-commercially and our plantations, that we're starting now to manage those areas. And mm-hmm. fir is pretty much our primary species, or weed as we may call it. The fir is a very disease-prone tree. So
okay.
We try to, when we're making an entry, that's usually one of the species we target.
Sure. So how susceptible are the, plantations of fir that you have now in the landscape, Mike? Because I think before, these places hadn't been harvested. I mean, they had a lot of mature softwoods there that were very susceptible to spruce budworm coming in. And now we have, a relatively young forest. Most of these plantations are trees that are, 20, 30 years old now, and they're not those big trees that we used to have. So how susceptible are they?
They are susceptible, but with the standpoint of the diversity across the landscape, 40 years ago, you had 1,000 acres of spruce fir.
Yeah.
Now they're because of the FPA laws that we talked about earlier, that a lot of these harvest areas are down to anywhere from 50 to 75 acres. It's a more fragmented,
right,
a lot of variety getting into the hardwood. So
sure,
it'll be slow for the budworm to kind of sweep across the landscape like it had in
right
years past.
So what would be your strategy if that happened again? I mean, how would you deal with it? I mean, you're not going to go in and have huge salvage cuts. I mean, these trees are fairly young. Most of them aren't even 10 inches on the butt, you know, in diameter.
Right.
So what would be the strategy?
We do a lot of work with LIDAR, which is a fancier form of aerial photography. But with that LIDAR data, we're targeting those stands, and that's how we're building our logging plans to try to target some of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Our main client is pressuring us heavily to explore other logging system options, right, smaller logging equipment to enter those stands earlier.
Yeah, good deal. You
know, most loggers want to cut big wood, but we're really trying to put them in more of those small diameter stands to really address a lot of the fir that's dropping out.
Sure. So what do you have there for wood on the landscape now and most of the lands that you manage in this area? Do you still have, you know, large sections of timber that, you know, are really marketable? Or we have mostly a young forest that has been harvested in the last 20 or 30 years? What's the outlook on that, Mike?
The answer to your question is yes. I mean, we try to maintain a balanced age class structure.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you drive out in your pickup, you could see a younger forest, but that's part of our management regime, is to try to get an equal balance of mature wood, young plantations,
yep,
young clear cuts, saplings, pole-sized timber.
Right.
It's to us, and the forest can't all be one thing, so we're trying
right
to manage the different aspects, the different ages of these stands of trees.
So keep it diverse, pretty diverse then, yeah.
Right.
Huh. That's great. Any other points that you want to make, Mike, about forest management and use on the landscape out there before? We've got just a few minutes left.
One thing that may be a concern moving forward, I think we've all been blessed with these large continuous tracts owned by a varying degree of different landowners, and people will have some fear about this will all change. I think the biggest concern I have for this industry moving forward is labor, the woods worker.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the mills closing in the next 10 years. It's finding people available to manage these stands in businesses that are willing to invest in it. We work closely with them. We depend on them. And I don't think they get enough attention of how much of a challenge they have.
Sure.
All the work you see, what we've talked about tonight, they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a great professional group to work with.
Now, when you say worker, what do you mean?
Again, American Forest Management's the land manager, but
right,
we pretty much will hire out, contract out for all our road construction services and
right
timber harvesting services, and I think that's our role,
right,
serving for the landowner of putting that the right prescription on the ground and getting the right equipment there.
Right. So you're putting local people to work.
That's right.
Yeah. I know some woodcutters, and they're always, you know, concerned where the next lot of land is going to be able to go in and harvest, do what they know, you know, use their skills and things. So, and it's woodcutters, it's contractors who build roads into these areas. There's a lot that goes into it.
If we can't get the work done, some of the landowners might ask, why do I own it?
Right, exactly. Sure. One of the things I did want to touch on is bear baiting. What does a sportsman have to do to try to get a bait site?
We have a commercial bear baiting license program as well as recreational. The commercial is geared towards the professional guides. And that baiting program, in working with Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife for their objectives on reducing the bear population, that we facilitate that baiting program, that they pay for a lease site anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 acres,
mm-hmm,
as well as some recreational folks that are sprinkled in that for two bait sites.
Sure.
Again, we're going on the lead of the biologist saying, hey, we need to reduce this the bear population. So we open the lands up for the bear baiting program.
You have a number that people can call?
That would be 827.
827, yeah.
3,700.
3,700.
We also have an office in Farmington as well, and I don't know that number off the top of my head.
Okay.
But if you Googled AFM in Maine, you get the Milford office as well as our Farmington office.
Now, what about retrieving, let's say you shoot a moose or you shoot a deer or a bear, and it's back in the woods a ways or back on one of the roads. It's not on an ATV trail or whatnot. What's your policy about allowing people to go and retrieve an animal?
This is one of the policies I probably like the most that we've come out with a number of years. We have an AT trail system. If you get caught off of that trail system, a game warden, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of if you have a dead harvested animal at the end of that trail, you get a free pass. So if anyone that harvests a deer, bear, or moose, and they need to use the ATV as a tool to retrieve that animal as quickly as possible, we do allow that.
Yep.
Anything beyond that, if you're caught off a designated ATV trail, you might have a problem.
Okay, and it would be, a trespass issue, correct?
And that's up to the discretion of the game warden.
The game warden, yeah. So you might get a ticket, and as we deal with them in fisheries, it's always up to their discretion on how they see things and how they want to enforce that rule or regulation. So, but great, we've touched on a lot of good points tonight, and really want to thank you, Mike Howie from AF American Forest Management, for coming in on Super Bowl Sunday. And I hope we've still got a lot of listeners out there.
If the Pats weren't playing, so.
The Pats weren't playing. Right. So,
if you asked me when the Patriots are playing, I would have said no.
Okay. Yeah. So again, thank you, Mike, for coming into the show tonight. It was a pleasure. And I want to thank all our listeners out there for listening to the Maine Outdoors.